Connecting our city and South Cambridgeshire. Cambridge 105 Radio.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour. Thanks to Ollie Slack for the last hour. And now here with the food and drink, it's Dr. Sue Bailey and me, Matt Bentman.
Today, produce from the farm that runs on horses, not tractors, is coming to a shop in Cambridge.
She's introducing vegetables to chefs in Cambridge and in London that they haven't seen before. Amazing, incredible array of different kales, different leaves, different beans, carrots of every colour, beets of every colour.
And there's produce from the coconut. It's also on sale in Cambridge and more products than you'd imagine.
So we have a whole range of products from coconut oil, coconut butter, toasted coconut butter. We have a few very special products that don't exist elsewhere, such as the coconut jam.
Produce from yeast cells at the bakery?
It's my favourite loaf at the minute. It's the seedy rye. So it's a light rye with pumpkin seeds on top. And if you toast that and have that butter and strawberry jam, it's just like, oh, the one. <That's> so amazing. Good, yeah.
Produce from the vineyard and at a very good price.
We wanted to do a spring sale and we a few bin ends in spring sale as well, and we thought why not put one of the wines that is one of our customer favourites on there and let people grab a bargain, and it's been flying.
We meet a very talented Italian cake maker.
Once I made a petit four for royalty. Is there an Andrew?
There is a Prince Andrew, yes.
Yes, there must have been Prince Andrew.
And food photography from Stella Pereira.
That's what food photography is about. As a cook, there's so much care into what you do, from the ingredients you pick. I think it does it a great injustice to not be able to transmit that into a photograph.
And we'll have our regular news and job section, a look at free food available via the Olio app, and the latest tweets from Cambridge's fine food purveyors.
So let's begin. Several of these features have a link to Eat Cambridge, the food and drink festival that starts on the 11th of May and runs through to the 26th. Alan Alder, who is away this week, spoke to Susanna Watson of Humclosen about two of her events.
Susanna, you're doing a couple of things with Eat Cambridge, and one of them is at number 31 Elsesley Avenue, which until recently has been a hairdresser's shop, so this is a change, presumably.
We are opening a pop-up shop as part of the Fringe Festival, and we'll be there from Wednesday to Sunday for each of the 2 weeks of the Fringe Festival.
So what sort of things are you going to be selling? Cheese, I guess.
Yes, everybody knows me by now for cheese, and I have sold wine for a long time, and we'll have a temporary license to continue the wine sales alongside the cheese. We also will have all the things to go with the cheese, of course, so my fantastic crackers and chutneys and all of those things that I do. But I'd like to reintroduce to Newnham some of the businesses that have visited us for the Sunday food fairs that I was running at the bakery last year. So Cucina de William will be coming back from Peterborough. Bumbler Oat Chocolate will be making some treats for us. And then I will also have some of the lovely produce that comes from Flourish, the farm that I have connections with just near to Linton. And we are talking to other suppliers all the time, so you can probably expect to find some more besides on the dry foods shelves as well.
Has the premises been altered, or are there still sort of, you know, places to wash people's hair and all that sort of thing?
All of that has been removed from the building. Interestingly, there was a lot of used hair product packaging under the floorboards of the shop. And so the new owners of the building have completely renovated, including all of the infrastructure, you know, the wiring, the piping, all of that is being done. And it will continue to be done for a little bit longer yet, because there is a residential property above. So Eat Cambridge has given us an opportunity to open as a pop-up. We will see how the location works and see the response from the neighbourhood. And who knows, we may settle in there following on from that. But as always with Eat Cambridge, it's an opportunity to try new things and test the response.
Will there be a cafe in there, or will it be...?
At the moment, the usage of the building is what's classified as A1. If we were to serve food, it would be to take away. Pre-prepared food. We are keen to gauge the response from the residents once we set up the pop-up as to actually what they need, whether it's food to take home that is already cooked, or a place to hold an event or a supper club themselves in the neighbourhood, or any of these ideas we are open to, and we're keen to start the conversation when we open in May.
And at the end of that fortnight, I mean, what then?
It does a little bit depend on the construction work that's happening. We would like to continue to open over the weekends through the summer, probably on Friday, Saturday and maybe Sunday morning, just to serve people at the time that they're at home and they'd like to have nice things to eat at home. Then the idea is that we will open permanently from the autumn, probably from September.
Right, well, that's very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, very exciting.
And also as part of Eat Cambridge, you're doing something with Flourish. Could you tell us something about that?
Yes, that's going to be a lovely event. We are hosting a tour of the farm and a tasting walk of the amazing array of vegetables that are grown at Flourish. The event is called Flourish and Friends. It's being held on Sunday, the first Sunday of the festival, the 12th of May, and it'll be late afternoon, so hopefully a gentle end to the weekend at 4 o'clock on Sunday. And we're hoping for good weather, but there are quite a number of polytunnels at Flourish, so the tasting walk can go indoors if needed. After that, we'll all sit down for a farm table feast, so a long table feast prepared by Katie Moore from Allotment Cafe. She'll be cooking a lot of the ingredients that people will have seen on the farm. And alongside, there will be some cheese and some natural wine.
supplied by yourself, I think.
Supplied by myself, yes. Yeah.
And Flourish is unusual in the fact that it uses horses rather than tractors and other vehicles.
Yeah, so humans and horses do all of the cultivation work at Flourish. I've volunteered on the farm through last growing season mainly. It is really hard work. There's a lot of work to be done, and it really gives you a sense of how much it takes to grow on a commercial basis without machines. But it really does. It's so rewarding, and it gives you a real understanding of the value of food. The soil is prepared with a lot of care at Flourish, following organic and biodynamic growing principles, and you definitely can taste the difference.
Yeah, so should be a nice evening then. But you said they have quite a big range of vegetables. I mean, what, a lot of different varieties of, say, things like carrots or unusual vegetables?
Mainly it's the unusual varieties. So Calixta did her training, as it were, well, learnt her craft in America and has brought back with her an incredible array of knowledge of different seed varieties, and actually does travel over to the States once a year to do her seed shopping. She's introducing vegetables to chefs in Cambridge and in London that they haven't seen before. So amazing, incredible array of different kales, different leaves, different beans, carrots of every colour, beets of every colour, really fantastic radishes and turnips. And then later through the year, the varieties of tomato, aubergine, peppers, all of those things. You haven't seen shapes or sizes or colours like it. And it's a real pleasure to see those introduced to the marketplace.
Yeah. Yes, that does sound good. And will some of these be on sale at 31 Eltersley Avenue?
Absolutely. So Flourish will be one of our key suppliers, and we're really excited to introduce their veg to retail, because up until now it's only been sold in a handful of local shops around Linton and used by chefs, but we're looking forward to offering it to people to take home and cook at home as well.
Yeah, tremendous. Right, well, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Alan.
Well, they sound like good events. Remember that you need to book for the Flourish and Friends Tasting Tour and Farm Table Feast. Details are on the Eat Cambridge website, and the shop at 31 Eltersley Avenue opens on the 15th of May.
Yeah. Now, another Eat Cambridge event is, of course, the main one, in the Guildhall on the 11th of May. One of the stalls there is run by Laura Dixon, and it's called 3x1 Europe. And Sue found out through jeans designer Laura Dixon how she got into the world of food.
So 3x1 Europe was a big accident, actually. I'm a jeans designer, that's my main profession, and I was going to Sri Lanka quite a lot to make jeans, and long story short is that I accidentally started helping a local family business with their coconut plantation. And in 2015, I began just with coconut oil. There's just the small jars, the 300ml jars of coconut oil. And then gradually over the past couple of years, we decided we wanted to become completely zero waste in our coconut production or coconut oil production. And we started making other products using all the different parts of the coconut and the sap from the tree. So we have a whole range of products from coconut oil, coconut butter, toasted coconut butter. We have a few very special products that don't exist elsewhere, such as the coconut jam, coconut nectar and coconut sugar. We also have coconut aminos, and our coconut aminos are fermented for 8 months to become aminos in barrels that are infused with chili, onion and garlic. Aminos is a fermented sauce. So flavour-wise, it's somewhere between a balsamic vinegar and a soya sauce.
Is this traditional to Sri Lanka?
Yes, it is quite traditional. It's a very old kind of sauce that in recent times is starting to come up again. But it's really suitable for vegans, for gluten-free. People with a soy allergy can replace soya sauce with it. It's also very low in sodium. So for those people who have those kind of intolerances, it's really good. Yeah, and our leftover shells become the bowls and the spoons. We're launching some more products very soon as well, which include more parts of the coconut too. Yeah, I also have a social enterprise up in the tea estates in Sri Lanka. Work with a Welsh girl who employs 5 mothers who can't work as tea pickers. They weave the fabrics themselves, then they dye using either things that they grow in their own garden or food waste from a local restaurant. So we're dyeing with things like avocado stones, onion skins, turmeric, all those kind of products, and they sew all the products, embroider all the products.
And yeah. That sounds fantastic, because I mean, you say 3x1 is the name. Is that because you're trying to get
the 3x1 is because I'm a jeans designer, I have this business, and I'm also a fitness instructor. And we grow turmeric and cinnamon in the plantation because it helps with the biodiversity of the plantation, and they're traditional Ayurvedic spices. So in Sri Lanka, they use those spices as medicine in various different ways. So A, it helps with the biodiversity. B, it's traditional to grow it in those areas as well. So yeah, they're all medicinal grade, really high in curcumin.
And you have a website, www.3by1.eu.
Correct, yes.
And
Facebook, 3by1 Coconut, and on Instagram, 3by1eu.
The products taste amazing.
Thank you.
I love the idea of the nectar, as you said.
Yes, yeah. Vegan honey.
Vegan honey, yes. I mean, we have bees, but I know not all vegans like the idea. Yeah. So
exactly.
That was Laura Dixon from 3x1 Europe. Coconut nectar sounds rather good. Did you have any, Sue?
Yes, I did. And compared to honey, actually, it was really rather nice. Ooh. I liked it.
Okay. I'm a big fan of the balsamic as well. So when she mentioned the amino sauce, that
yes, gave very, me a real, very interesting.
A
yum.
Good impression, that. Yeah.
Different. Here's news of some free food available now in Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire, which you can find on the Olio app.
Yes, Olio, as I hope we all know by now, is the free to download on iOS and Android phones and tablets. It's a free app, and using your location, it'll tell you what free food is available near you. And a quick look at it tells us that, and you might have to fight me for these, a chap called Fingal is giving away crisps, lots and lots of crisps, so many available. They have a best before date of March 2019, but, you know, since crisps have been foil packed over the last however many years, they last for ages. Available for collection in front of the geography department on the Downing College site until 6 p.m. for as long as they last. And Downing College, for anyone who doesn't know, that's the one opposite Parker's Piece on Regent Street. Fingal, again. He's also giving away strawberry wafer biscuits, available from the same site, of course. There is always plenty more free food available on the Olio app during the weekdays. And frequently there are sandwiches and baguettes from shops in town like Pret, who donate all their unsold stock to stop it going to waste. So, yeah, why not give the Olio app a try and see what pops up?
Right now, Deborah Bonnet runs Biscotti de Deborah from her bakery at Dry Drayton. She also has an event running at Eat Cambridge this year called Dolce e Vino. I don't think we've ever spoken to Deborah, have we?
No, this is the first time. It can be really tricky catching up with people when they have to devote all of their own time to running their businesses. There's often little room for anything else. But luckily, I caught up with Deborah in town this week, and she told me a little bit about herself, her products, and of course, her Eat Cambridge event.
Great British bakers. Yeah. There is no point in trying to imitate. Italian cakes are nice the way they are, and English people seem to like them. I generally make what I describe as Italian cakes, the celebration cakes, and they're based on Genoise, so very light sponge, very fluffy, filled with crème pâtissière and all sorts of flavours, and they're usually finished with fresh cream, so we tend not to use buttercream or the fondant icing or the sugar paste. And then the other side of my production is petit four. The real Italian word is pasticcini. It's miniature cakes, like an eclair, but round, so shuban, so profiteroles, so filled with all different fillings. Because there is so much request for gluten-free cakes, I make these sort of cakes. One of the favorite ones is an orange and polenta. Seems to be an Italian recipe. It has oranges and it has polenta, and it's naturally gluten-free, naturally dairy-free. Other ones, it's an almonds and cherries. Again, it's a variation of a frangipani tart. I just kept the fillings and I made it into a cake. And again, it's gluten-free because it's all based on almonds. And so these sort of cakes are available in cafes like Espresso Library, Flock, The Larder, Café Foy. So, yeah.
Oh yes, I saw your photo celebrating Café Foy's first anniversary.
Oh yes, yeah. That's right. I've been supplying them with my cakes since the very, very beginning. It was fun. It's always good being approached by new cafes opening up and see how they develop. In summertime especially, it's wedding time. So yes, I do a lot of weddings and do a lot of events. In June, Mabel Week is going to be very interesting, very exciting. I've been doing Trinity College Mabel for a few years now, and it's great. And this year I'm doing also Walsall College and Queen's. So it's great, yeah.
How long has baking been in your blood?
Since the very, very beginning. I baked my first cake when I was around 4 or 5, something like that. My uncle, he came to visit, and because he was staying in Sicily visiting for a couple of weeks to have his holidays, he would always bring a big present for me. Yeah. And he bought a toy oven.
I misunderstood Deborah at first. See, when I was growing up, they advertised something similar on TV. Now, do you remember the Bluebird a la carte kitchen?
Give that to stir. Check the oven. I'd better serve up now. They'll be coming round in a minute.
The little girl serves her dad a plate with 3 baked beans on it, and then she takes an entire jam roly-poly and mashes it on the top.
Wake up, Daddy. Breakfast ready.
A la carte kitchen from Bluebird Toys.
That kitchen set was just a toy. You couldn't really cook anything, and that fact really wound me up. However, Deborah, her uncle gave her a kitchen set that was so much better.
And that's when I cooked my first cake. It was actually made with 2 lamp bulbs. Yes, and
it was a proper working
job. Yeah, it was. 2 bulbs were so close to each other. The whole thing provided very thin baking trays. Mm-hmm. Then there was a special booklet with special recipes, and with the help of my mum, I did a few of them. So yes, I made excellent pizzas with toast bread. Yeah, from the very, very beginning. Yeah. It fueled my imagination then, because of course, yes, I could actually do something.
Yeah.
A toy that was actually working. Yeah. I still have that booklet. I still have a few that I haven't managed to do when I was a child. One day I might try them.
You've been here 13 years.
Yes.
So you've seen how the food scene in Cambridge has changed so significantly.
Yes.
In that time.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, the first months when I moved, my boyfriend and I were looking for places where to go and eat.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really great, to be honest. It was a bit boring. It felt as if there were just a handful of restaurants, always the same. Whereas nowadays, I was just having a conversation with a friend the other day, and we were saying maybe we should try and visit, well, all of the restaurants that Cambridge now has.
Yeah.
We probably wouldn't be able to do it in a year if we tried. Yeah, so it's great. Because I'm Italian, Italians tend to go and eat out, and they will still eat Italian food. Whereas the beauty of England, and Cambridge in particular, is that you want a Chinese, you want an Indian, but you have a different variety of them. And now you can choose, I don't know, steak and honor, or you can go for a different kind of burger. Italy doesn't work that way, but it's another program, another story.
So your most recent event was at Burwash Manor for Love Food.
Oh, yes.
Back in March,
yes.
Yeah. Now, next up, of course, is Eat Cambridge and your Fringe event, specifically your Italian desserts paired with wines from Vine and Cork Limited.
Yes.
When did you meet up with these guys?
We met a few months ago. They're a fairly new company. I just loved their attitude. We just met in a friendly kitchen, drinking some wine and discussing about having a food business or a wine business in England and being Italian. And I felt that we just clicked. And so from then we started thinking, oh, well, it would be nice to do a few things together. And I thought, oh, a fringe event for Eat would be just perfect. Then I always thought it would have been great to combine my cakes with wines, but I know a lot about cakes, nothing whatsoever about wine, just about the fact that I like drinking it. So I suggested it to them and they were happy. That's how we started. And we spent one Sunday eating and drinking. It was so much fun. It was great. Now it's up to me to think about what to actually say. I'm happy preparing the cakes. That's what I'm good at.
Okay, so that's all going to be on the 19th of May.
Yes.
Sunday the 19th of May.
Yes, that's right, at Cambridge Cookery School, that very, very kindly is going to host us.
That's a great venue.
Yes,
yeah,
yes, lovely. Yes, fantastic, yes, great, Tina. We have 30 spaces. If we manage to recreate the fun that we had that Sunday, just the three of us drinking wine and tasting cakes and exchanging ideas and having a lovely conversation, it would be great. That's what I hope.
That's the goal. Well, thanks very much, Deborah, for chatting to us. As you can hear, listeners, we are about to be attacked by the police. We're out here on Parker's Peace. I thought it would be nice to come out on a sunny day, and we're in danger of rain. We're being battered by the wind, but it's all good fun all the same.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Deborah. And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sorry. Good luck editing!
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, I'm terrible. Can feel the ice melting in your eye.
Can almost feel the trip. Many thanks to Deborah Bonnes. You can see her products on Twitter at @Biscotti_Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A, and place orders via her website, Biscotti Deborah. So that's biscottidebora vinecork.co.uk. Vine and Cork are the company she's collaborating with. They specialise in importing Italian wines for new appellations and new grape varieties.
Yeah, and her eCambridge event is called Dolce e Vino, which translates as food and wine. It's on the 19th of May from 4 till 6 p.m. at the Cambridge Cookery School, which is located off of Purbeck Road. The booking's deadline, however, is the 12th of May. Tickets are £30 and you can book your place if you email info@vineandcork.co.uk.
A very long time ago, we interviewed Chris Murray, owner of Cambridge's Dovecot Bakery. The bakery has expanded since and several family members have joined in, including Katie Murray, who I met a couple of weeks ago.
We started about 15 years ago. My dad set up the business. He was started as a kitchen bakery in our cottage that had a dovecot in the back, hence the name. And from there it's grown exponentially, really. We then got a bakery in Cambridge and sold wholesale, and then in the last year we've bought a craft bakery over in Bedfordshire in Potton and Gamlingay, and we've been drawing that over to a more artisan style and refreshing the bread that we sell there, and it's been a really exciting project. So yeah, we sell a range of sourdough, we do tinned loaves. We've got this idea that we'd like bread to stay an everyday item, but be really good for the body and really good for, like, yeah, your health and just, like, a daily staple. Yeah.
Without all the commercial additives that a lot of commercial bakeries use.
100%. We're all into, like, slow process, like, the following original recipes, no chemicals, just what should be in bread, and that's really important to us. And, yeah, we don't skimp on any time because we think it develops flavour.
Do you do things like rye breads as well?
Yeah. So we've got a rye culture. So we've got a white sourdough culture and a rye sourdough culture, and that allows us to make bread that's wheat-free and has really developed in that rye flavour. We've got a unique bread spice that we add to our rye bread, so it makes it, like, ooh, really sing. Yeah. Yes. My favourite loaf at the minute is the seedy rye. So it's a light rye with pumpkin seeds on top. And if you toast that and have that butter and strawberry jam, it's just like, oh, the one. So amazing. Good, that's, yeah.
Amazing. I mean, a lot of people have given up carbs. You know, they've sort of reduced bread. Mm. What would you say about that? Is that a problem?
Well, we haven't really found that in terms of, you know, what we're doing. Obviously, yeah, there is the diet craze, but what we're really tapping into is the idea of fermentation. Bread is actually part of that, because, and sourdough especially, because it's double fermented. So we're really getting into that and to the heart of that, and we're going to develop new fermentation products and make that part of the bakery, as the bakery is a centre of fermentation. That's our sort of idea that we're going to head forward with. So yeah, that's quite an exciting thing, and obviously that then avoids or moves around this carb-free idea that's quite popular at the minute. But as with every sort of diet, it comes and goes, and new information will come out that bread's great, and we have been eating it for a long time. So,
true enough, we have indeed. Yes.
And I think lots of people maybe react to the chemicals that are put into bread rather than the bread itself. So, as I said, we stick to, like, high-quality ingredients and no chemicals, and we really care about what we do. So, like, that's the utmost of importance, to make sure that people feel good and, like, keep well and healthy, and yeah, so that's really important.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Lastly, do you have a website and Twitter and various things like that?
Of course, yeah, you can follow us on, like, all the social media platforms. Instagram's obviously a great one because we do a lot of photos of and little video shots of what we're doing. Facebook, I'm always promoting our farmers markets that we go to, St Ives and Ely, and the markets, like, here today we're at Burwash Love Food Festival, which has been a really fantastic day. So yeah, I'm promoting them on Facebook, so follow us on there. And then yeah, look at our website for details of our stockists.
And that was Katie Murray from Dovecot Bakery. As well as selling their breads in various shops, they're at the Ely and St Ives farmers markets too. The first and third Saturdays of the month at St Ives, and the second and fourth at Ely, both from 8:30 a.m. until 2 p.m, but you're advised to arrive early before they sell out.
And there's the music signalling time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Calverley's Brewery on Hooper Street are celebrating their beer of the week, the Amarillo and Centennial. A 4.5% pale ale with American hops, blending a grapefruit tang and lemony zest. And parked up outside Calvary's brewery today is Pizza Mundo, with freshly made Neapolitan pizza with vegan and veggie options.
Yeah, now it's Big Dig Day in Romsey Community Garden today. From 2 till 4, you can do some planting, some seed sowing, weeding at the community garden space that's in Mamora Road, just off Mill Road, on the Romsey side, of course. It's all free and there will be refreshments too.
George Heffer, who runs George's Bakery on the market, has tweeted his latest creation, a peach butter sponge featuring layers of buttercream, clotted cream, chunky peach slices, topped with peach juice and fizzy peach sweets. Sounds peachy.
It does.
You can find George and his many cake creations at Cambridge Market on Sunday.
And finally, CAMRA, which stands for the Campaign for Real Ale, have just released their latest editions of What's Brewing and the simply titled Beer in big capital letters. Essential reading for all ale enthusiasts, especially with the Cambridge Beer Festival less than a month away. And you can read a digital copy of that too if you go online to wb.camra.org.uk.
At Eat Cambridge this year, a special talk will be given by Stella Pereira and Charlotte Griffiths on food photography. Matt caught up with Stella the other week to find out more.
When I started, I didn't start as a photographer, I started as a cook. And I did supper clubs.
Stella Pereira's supper clubs are well known. We've mentioned them several times over the years on Flavour. She's passionate about details.
Rhubarb, roast rhubarb in port.
Is that
the ice cream?
The atmosphere was fantastic, wasn't it?
It's the thing that I enjoy most about these suppers is it's actually the people that sit around the table, and I keep saying this, it's the people. And sometimes if you have really simple food, you can achieve a magical evening just with the mood, the lighting, you know. And anyone that's been to my supper club knows that it's a table filled with minute details, things that I pick up along the way, things that are going to add to the whole story at the end of it.
In her move to photography, food photography in the case of this feature, Stella really wants to evoke the smells, the sounds and the stories behind the food, just as she does with her supper clubs. This is her description to a menu that she did for a supper club last year. Imagine shooting this as a photo.
You start in the morning and it's all slow cooked, and you just extract all the flavours from all the meats, the bones and the broths. The broth becomes very rich, you know, potatoes that taste smoky, and with all the depth of flavour, it's amazing. I think it's really, really good.
From cook to food photography.
I decided to get into photography seriously last September. I mean, I was doing it as a way of getting my message across because I wasn't good with words. I can talk. Oh, God, I can talk. But I don't know how to sell. If I can do that without even saying a word, perfect. So I did it out of necessity to, you know, how do I sell a wedding cake without having to say, this is a wedding cake, this is how much it costs, and a lot of people find that uncomfortable.
Letting the pictures do the talking.
When I start my workshops, one of the first things I do is give people a story. So this is a baker that wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So she picks up her grains and then creates something out of pretty much nothing. Bread is something simple. It's storytelling rather than just snapping a picture. It's trying to uncover what's underneath, what inspires this person to do what they do.
All storytelling, whether it's Stella's suppers or a new bakery, like when Maison Clément opened on Hills Road.
In French, we say that the world belongs to the people who get up early. So, and it was so true. The same with the atmosphere. You could see people coming at 5 o'clock asking for croissant, baguette. It was idyllic. That's where I got this passion from.
Storytelling.
What makes them wake up every morning to create what they create? That pretty much is it for me in food photography, is being able to tell the story from start to finish, from picking the ingredients to creating a recipe to feeding somebody, and then the stories that end up at that table because of whatever you created before.
Eat Cambridge 2018 proved to be the turning point for Stella and her photography. A competition put on by festival director Heidi White and writer and photographer Charlotte Griffiths called the Eat Cam Cam.
I remember this. There's a dome, a glass dome in the middle of the guild hall. I don't think anyone notices it, but there was all this noise. I noticed this beam of light from the dome hitting this macaroon table. And it just completely lit up. Shall I show you?
Yes.
Yes, I keep all this stuff.
Stella pulls up the photo on her phone.
It was a little girl, and she actually turned out to be Hamklos and Susanna's daughter.
Oh, yeah?
And they weren't on that scene. I was just shooting the light hitting the table, and I've got, like, 6 shots until suddenly she just stretched her hand and that shot. It won the
that's
competition.
That's beautiful. It won?
Yeah. So that's when I started taking photography a bit more seriously.
If you want to see Stella's winning shot, just go to Twitter and type #EatCamCam. That's all one word.
I've recently started using light a lot more. Mm. It's a powerful thing. I always use natural light. Mm-hmm. I look at how light changes. I tend to take pictures on the same spot, and I like to see how it changes within the seasons. The way it glows, the color, how it reflects. Mm. This side of the wall turns golden at one point of the day. So you kind of begin to study how light performs and how it dances around the room. And one place to do this, and I think it's excellent, is Kettle's Yard. If you can find a day where you just sit there and look at how the shadows and the light completely transforms the room, you'll start to understand how light works. And if you can then apply that to an image, there'll be much more power in what you're trying to convey.
A few years ago, I met with 4 different food photographers who shoot around Cambridge. Their take on light was equally illuminating, such as this comment from Mike Sim.
When you're working in kitchens and then you're around the food and sometimes you just see the food can look stunning, if you can get that in the right light, there's a real art to it. Quite fantastic once you get in amongst it. I always use natural light, always, because what you're wanting to learn to do is understand light composition and develop your own style. You don't need a professional grade camera to do that. You know, if I could, I would carry around something the size of an iPhone the entire time. Yeah.
Or photographer Lucinda Price.
When you find the perfect light, it's a bit like winning a World Cup or scoring the goal, the match-winning goal. When you've got the great light, it's just easy and it's wonderful.
Or Mr. Ozzie Beck.
There's something always about the quality of light that will determine the outcome. The better the light, the better your result will be. That is one of the basic rules of photography. Light is really, really important.
And my workshops are usually with phone cameras. People bring whatever they have. And all we talk about is light. I share most of my favorite images. Uh-huh. Little tricks like using droplets of water shows that it's freshly picked, because yeah. This was from Simon's stall on the market and I got home.
So we're looking at a red cabbage here. A king cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
And this was taken with...
The camera. But again, this could be done with a phone, because what the phone does really well is take flat lays and straight angles. It doesn't do the 45-degree angle very well.
Okay.
Because when you sit down, this is how you see your food.
Mm.
So this is probably the best angle to take a picture of your food or any dish.
Mm.
I get very nervous about pulling out my camera, especially at a table. It is quite bulky. And actually, one of the tricks that I've learned is to use one of these tiny lenses.
Yeah.
A pancake lens would be ideal as well. This one is a 50mm lens. But my purpose is to see how people interact. Yeah, my purpose is to transmit everything that it's taken to create this dish into a specific moment at the end where somebody's actually enjoying what they have in front of them.
And whether I'm looking at your camera or whether I'm looking at my microphone, it's something that can be quite intimidating to people,
yeah.
And it can automatically put them on edge. The amount of times I've spoken to people and they sounded so natural to me, and then the moment I hit the record, their voice goes flat.
I know too well.
I wish I could do this without the microphone in between us.
Yeah,
you know?
And I'm glad you used the word in between, because it's really important to capture the moments in between.
Mm.
So when I started baking cakes, I had all the utensils. And ended up using 2 things, a knife and a cake tin. And I forced myself to use what I have. So in my workshops, I don't tell people to buy expensive gear. I recommend this lens because it's what your eye sees, the 50mm. So on the 11th of May at the main event, we're running a workshop with Eat Cambridge, Charlotte Griffith and myself. It's about food photography and storytelling. And what we're going to do is go around all the stalls. So it's trying to get their personalities into a single shot. And I hope we can achieve that.
Charlotte Griffiths is photo a lot.
Yes, she is.
On Twitter.
I've quietly admired Charlotte's work, and I don't think I could take pictures like she does. She's got so much light in everything that she creates.
Yeah.
I like my images to be steely and dark. So this is also one of my favorite. It's very boring, humble chicken soup, but it kind of makes you want to steal the spoon off my hand. And I keep hiding in all my shadows, and it's an absolute honor to be able to work with her. Lately, I've had a lot of feedback from people telling me the difference that I've made for their business. If they can explain to their customers without having to explain with words, job done, I think.
Yes.
I hope.
That was Stella Pereira, and her food photography talk with Charlotte Griffiths will be on the day of the main event. That's Saturday, the 11th of May. Stella and Charlotte will be styling a food photo shoot to show how the pros make dishes look so good on Instagram and the glossy magazines.
Yeah. However, places are already limited, but Stella does also run her own styling workshops too, which you can find via her website, stellapereira.com. I'll just spell that out. Stella, P-E-R-E-I-R-A.
Another event at Eat Cambridge is the six-course sherry and food matching masterclass that takes place at Pint Shop on the 16th of May. Alan Alder spoke with James Thorne about setting up a wine merchant business in Cambridge and some of the bargains he has on offer.
Now, James, you're running an online shop, and I want to ask you a bit about that. But before I do, when I was looking on your website earlier, I was amazed to see, well, two things really stood out to me. One was a Pinot Noir for £5.99. And I couldn't help but wonder what it's like. I mean, you're not going to want to sully your reputation by selling wines that aren't good, but that's an extraordinary price.
You're completely correct there. We, at the end of the day, we buy wines that we love. It's always been it is the mantra of the independent wine merchant. You can't sell something you don't like. You can't also sell something to someone that you know that they're not going to like. It's quite painful when I sell a wine to someone and I'm not sure whether or not it's going to be their cup of tea. So when I select all of our wines, we work on the basis of, will we drink it? Firstly, yes. Will everyone else out there, will our friends, will our family drink it? If it's a yes, then perfect. It's the kind of wine we'll stock. So the Pinot Noir from Romania, I mean, we're talking about an area that's been growing wines for centuries. They've got some of the oldest winemaking history. And in fact, the vineyards where this come from are 400 years old. They go back even further. They go back to 1410, I think, is when some of the vineyards that, maybe not for this exact wine, but the producer itself, they have dating. And it's just a lovely, juicy, easy Pinot Noir. It's not going to be your Burgundian style with really refined characteristic. It's a drinker. It's an easy and supple drinking wine. It's got those lovely, light, fruity and floral characteristics, slightly perfumed, not the sort of confected and sweeter styles that you can get from other grape varieties. So take a Merlot from the same producer. It's got more blackcurrant, more dark red fruits, whereas this Pinot Noir from Calissari is a little bit more on the lighter, fresher side, but it still has those fruity characteristics, but they're more like cherries and cranberries.
And the other one that I sort of alighted on with great rapidity was the grey, wacky Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc for £15. That's very reasonable. I mean, these are good wines with great reputations, aren't they?
They are. We've always been fans of Grey Wacky. Ever since Kevin Judd left Cloudy Bay, moved on to Pastures New, setting up his own winery. He had 20 years of experience making Cloudy Bay, so he knew what he was doing.
And he'd established such a reputation through that wine.
Yeah. It's the wine that put Marlborough and New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc on the map. So when we started up, we knew that was going to be the first wine on the list. It was going to be one of the wines that would be our sort of cornerstone for Sauvignon Blanc. Now, it's not a cheap wine. So its retail price is about $17.99, $18.99. But we wanted to do a spring sale, and we have a few bin ends in the spring sale as well. And we thought, why not? Why not put one of the wines that is one of our customer favourites on there and let people grab a bargain? And it's been flying, so
I'm not surprised. Right, and another thing that I discovered was that you do home tastings. Could you Yeah. Explain what they are.
So one thing, having been in the trade for quite a while and more in the retail side of things, one thing I missed was that interaction with people in an environment where they're tasting wines, they're sat down and they're enjoying what they've got. Now, going to a tasting at a venue can sometimes be a little bit stuffy, or you don't get the interaction that you would always want with the person giving the tasting because there might be 30 other people in the room. But what we like to do is we offer at-home tasting. We obviously we have a schedule. We have a diary which fills up. So there are certain dates that will never be available. But we will always work to the customer on the basis that if they want it on a Saturday evening or a Friday evening, we can do that. That's not a problem. And we will come to said person's house and taste through a range of wines. It can be their favourite wines. It could be the styles that they've enjoyed, or it could be an opportunity to explore other wines, which I think is the better option, because it's hard for you to throw a lot of money into wine and play Russian roulette. Mm. Whereas we can do that for you. We can pick out the wines that we think you might like on the basis that you like grey wacky. We might show you something from, for example, down in the southwest of Spain where sherry comes from. There's a great variety which is used to make sherry called Palomino. And when it's made as a table wine with a little bit of Pedro Ximenez blended in, it's very much like a Sauvignon Blanc. So we would do things like that. We would play around. And normally we work on 6 wines. But at the end of the day, the price is determined by the customer.
But what about wines that really go best with food? What would you do under those circumstances?
We have, in the past, when we've done tastings, we have supplied food. But at the end of the day, these are more focused on the wines themselves. If someone wanted to put their own food down, then perfect, great. Mm. But whenever we've done events before where food's been involved, we've always had to use proper food registered and food safe kitchens, and getting into one of those can be a little bit tough, depending on timing. So we've worked with people in the past, like Bread and Meat have been really, really supportive. And we've also teamed up with Steak and Honour. And when we did some pop-ups a few years ago, we played around and made some stuff in their kitchens. And yeah, it's brilliant.
And your background in wine, I mean, you clearly know a great deal about it. So where did that expertise come from?
I had quite a long journey into the wine trade. From a young age, my parents had always said, look, this is a great industry to go into. Study Spanish. You can go out to Spain. You can go and do that. So I tried that. Didn't go successfully. Dropped out of university. I then had the opportunity to go out to South Africa and make wine. So I went out there for 2 vintages and made wine at a fabulous winery called Fondeling, one of the wines that the producers that we sell. I then went from there to do a bit of work in vineyards in the UK when I wasn't out in South Africa. And then off the back of it, worked for 2 pretty reputable merchants, one down in Bristol called Avery's, which is one of the oldest merchants in the country. Mm. And then more locally here in Cambridge, I worked for one of the merchants here for 7 years.
But setting up as a retailer yourself, that's quite a risk, because, you know, I would have thought that the wine trade in Cambridge was pretty sewn up.
Yeah, it's almost like saying we're going to set up a bike shop in Cambridge. Probably is something actually that is quite good to do, because there are a lot of bikes, but also there are a lot of bike shops. There are a lot of really good merchants here in Cambridge, but it doesn't just stop there, because online there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people selling wine. So at the end of the day, we thought if we can do it, then great, we'll crack on. But we're not out there to try and be the next big Berry Brothers and Rudd or anything like that. It's about supplying wine to people who are like-minded, who enjoy their wines, but also showing our passion. I mentioned a little bit earlier too that it's pretty hard to set up a retail shop straight off the bat when you're setting up a business, but online is a little bit more accessible. So we've gone down that route, and my initial goal was sort of 60 wines, be very focused. We're now looking more at about 350 plus wines, and ever growing and always changing. But one of the things that I love the most about the online side of things is it's accessible anywhere at any time. So you, for example, could have a look on our website and peruse the wines. You could see that's on offer, or this is at this price when you buy so many bottles. Whereas in a shop, it's a little bit more limited to what you're looking at in front of you. So we're enjoying the online scape at the moment, but it would be nice to get some bricks and mortar at one point.
Yeah. And you're delivering by bike.
Yeah.
Well, certainly in the centre of Cambridge, that must be a bit hazardous, mustn't it?
It's been successful so far. So we work really closely with All Parcels Cambridge for our national delivery. And they do fantastic service, 24-hour delivery. So we use them for anything that has to go anywhere in the UK. And we've never had a single breakage with them, which is quite an achievement for a courier. And we must have sent 200 or 300 packages last year and not one went, because we use a system called AirSAC. But then here in Cambridge, getting deliveries done was quite time-consuming and quite hard. So we basically decided that a bike was the best way to do it. And our stores are just on the outskirts, so for us to get into town, it's 3 miles. But for us to drop to do anything up to about 48 bottles, we can do it on a cargo bike. Mm. And these things are electric assist, so there's pedalling involved, but it's a lot less effort than you'd think pushing 50 or 60 kilos of alcohol. But it does also mean we can do it at times that suit people a little bit more, because beforehand it used to be that we would deliver during the day and people aren't in. But we now offer delivery, any local delivery, we'll contact the customer and make sure that it's a suitable time or there's a location to be left there. So, for example, we just dropped just off Mill Road last night at 6:30. So it puts us in a good position to be able to do it during rush hour. Mm. and safely. Cycleways here are pretty good. So.
Right, so if people want to contact you, how do they do that?
So the best thing to do is visit our website, which is www.thornwines.com, and that's Thorn with an E. Or alternatively, drop an email to james@thornwines.com.
Right, OK. Well, thank you very much, James.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was James Thorne of Thorne Wines. The date again for his 6-course masterclass at Pint Shop is the 16th of May, and details are in the Eat Cambridge programme, which you can find online or pick up at many of Cambridge's independent food places. And there's our familiar green onions, signalling the start of our new section. We begin with jobs, Sue.
Full-time and weekend chef positions are available at the Botanic Garden Cafe and Kettle's Yard Cafe. The full-time hours at both are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and there's a free meal on duty. You can apply via the Gumtree's job section.
Now, the Ivy on 16 Trinity Street are looking for waiters and waitresses with front-of-house experience and also an assistant general manager. There is training available, staff discounts and reward programmes, and you can apply via their website, theivycambridgebrasserie.com/careers.
Midsummer House are looking for a kitchen porter to join their team. It's a full-time position working from Wednesday to Saturday with a salary of £18,000. Applications can be made via the Gumtree jobs section.
And remember, if you do apply for any of these jobs, please let them know that you heard about it on Flavour here on Cambridge 105 Radio. And to advertise in this space, you can contact sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
On to the city news now, and Brewdog are soon to be opening a pub on the Cow premises on Bennett Street.
The Cambridge Juice Company, they make 100% pure apple juice. They are currently delivering them free around Cambridgeshire. This offer is only available while stocks last, and it's only 34p a bottle on offer. You can email kelly.cjc@btconnect.com to order.
On the 15th of May at 6:30 at the Pear Tree in Hildesheim, Chef Gaël Lecolli is demonstrating how to create stunning vegan dishes from scratch using organic seasonal produce. Tickets are £55 and it's part of the Eat Cambridge Festival. And you can book yours via the Eat Cambridge website.
Cambridge Market is advertising on Twitter for anyone who is interested in setting up a stall. So, if you have a service or a retail idea, then it could be a good idea to contact the market via their website, cambridge.gov.uk, and then look up the page Market Trading Stalls and Licensing.
And finally, there was a recent addition to the market with a new trader called My Special Occasions. They specialise in vegan and gluten-free cakes, and they'll be on the market every Wednesday. Also, I'll be doing my 60s food celebrity Fanny Craddock impression at Ely's free food and drink festival that's going to be taking place this coming bank holiday weekend. Fanny will be demonstrating an eel cake sponge darling on Monday the 6th of May at 2 p.m. alongside other well-known chefs such as Aldo Zilli. do come along.
And that's all we have time for you today. We are here on alternate Saturdays at 1 p.m, repeated Sundays at 2, and then podcast early in the next week.
If you want to get in touch with any news or comment when we're off air, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or contact us on Twitter at flavour105.
And coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio is Bookmark, featuring author Penny Hancock, stand-up comedian turned author Sam Avery, and Joshua Winning, who writes for the Young Adult Readership, all three talking about their latest books.
More writing with some poetry thrown in follows that at 3 o'clock with Off the Page, presented by Helen Holgate and Sandra Burney.
The Science Show is at 3:30. That's our monthly programme focusing on the leading scientific lights in Cambridge.
And perhaps you might have missed something during the week on 105. Not to worry, at 4 p.m, the aptly named What You Might Have Missed is here to set you right, featuring all the best of the last 7 days on the station, presented by Rosie Applin.
Then at 5 p.m, Jack Swindlehurst and the team are here with the Cambridgeshire Football Show with all the latest results.
From 6 till 8 is Chris Brown's Soul and Dance Show,
followed by Centuries of Sound, a selection of audio spanning the first recorded pieces right up to, well, perhaps me saying these words, really. That's presented by James Errington.
And at 9 p.m. it's Rock of Ages, featuring Ted Kerhurst, reflecting on his time playing with The Lonely, a local band that's been performing for 40 years.
And finally, Club Beats brings you feel-good dance tracks to take you through from 11 to 1 a.m, courtesy of Mr. Dave Price. So that's all from us. Flavour will be back with more food and drink on the 11th of May. So until then, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.